Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 35. I feel relaxed. This is lovely. My name's Gareth Carter, and we've got no one here to fuck it up today, James.
Yeah, not necessarily.
Well, we've got us, right?
Yeah, I'm perfectly willing to fuck this up.
It's the shouting and the talking over each other and the...
And whatever everyone else does, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it's just me and James this week. So if you were tuning in to hear guests, you better just turn off now.
Why can I ask, now that we're on the air, why did you want to do one just me and you this week?
Well,
are you sick of all the others? Just, you can tell me it's just me and you here. It's just me and you. You can be honest.
It was so much shouting last week.
What was
and
last
I have
week?
Got a loud voice.
What was last week?
Episode 34, funny enough.
Who was on it?
Kyra and Gina.
Oh yeah, that was a bit shouty.
It was a bit shouty, wasn't it?
So yeah, anyway. and we've sent one packing to the Dominican Republic, and the other one is firmly locked outside the room.
So to kick us off on this this lovely little episode, which I must say I'm enjoying already, James, the little chief, aka the chief editor of the Cool Shit newsletter, that goes out every week. How are you?
Well, I'm glad you asked, actually.
Okay, good.
I'm a little bit annoyed with you.
Oh, whoa. I'm glad we've gone here. What's up?
We had to delay this until about an hour after we were meant to originally record it. And I like to record these hungry, but I got too hungry. So now I'm feeling very, very tired and very sleepy. So I'm not going to, lack my usual exuberance. Although you've just said it's going to be a more chilled podcast.
It plays into the placidity of this episode. It's
okay.
Great.
All right. Okay. In that case, yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
Go on then. Story one. What have you got?
Right. Story one. I've bought this one because I've watched it about five times and I still genuinely don't know what I think of it. It's attracted quite a lot of attention within the parochial confines of our weird little industry. So basically, McDonald's have released a new advert, which obviously they're one of the biggest brands in the world. That's always going to get some attention. But this one was directed by Edgar Wright.
So Edgar Wright, the film director.
The acclaimed film director.
Well,
yeah.
It came to prominence with Space. Did you ever watch that? A 90s, late 90s
I did
sitcom.
Not. I was soiling myself in the late 90s.
Well, you should probably give it a go. It's definitely worth a rewatch. So he developed that with Simon Pegg, then went on to do Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz, yeah.
Hot Fuzz. And then he went proper Hollywood, didn't he?
Yeah. Did he do like...
Is it Baby Rider? Is that the name of the movie? The Getaway Driver one?
Baby... Is it?
I don't know.
Baby Rider. That doesn't sound wrong.
Baby Driver?
Baby Driver's a thing, I think. Yeah,
Baby Driver. Let's just check that I'm not talking utter. But yeah, Baby Driver, 2017. He directed that.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know more than I do.
Yeah, right.
But so he's directed this new ad for McDonald's, and it's. Well, should we watch it first, actually?
Well, you did say that you were bringing this story, and I made a promise that I wouldn't watch the advert.
Yeah. Have you got it there?
No, you play.
Because we did this last week, and I think we both quite enjoyed the live reaction. Well, yours will be live, mine might be. So live and lie. Right, you ready?
Yep.
And this is your first time viewing this.
100%, first time viewing this.
And we've never met before.
And we've never met before, and I don't know what I'm doing here.
Sure.
So classic tune used in Ferris Bueller. It's funny, it looks filmy straight away.
Yeah, it does. It's got his style, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. And also just a retro-ness to it.
Mm.
I love it.
Do you? Yeah, I see. I can't...
I like it.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I quite like it, but I couldn't tell if it's just one of those things that's kind of like... wanky within the industry will win awards and people like it, or whether it's actually kind of serving a purpose.
So
let's
dissect it a bit, I guess. So for the listener, in the advert, two girls sort of like look at each other. It starts off in an office. It looks that office kind of has been designed with a sort of like a 90s feel.
There's no Macs and stuff. It's not like the classic Google office. It's more like a kind of old school office.
Yeah, exactly. Where there was a sandwich man that came around at like 12 o'clock,
which is probably intentional. because I think those offices kind of, I don't know, when you get the kind of hip like advertising agency style offices now, it probably wouldn't suit this quite so well. You kind of want to create the ordinary environment of boredom, I guess.
Exactly, and that's really played into the styling, and that's what I really enjoyed with it, a lot of the styling of it. But so two girls sort of like have a look at each other with a knowing look, and they're like, they get up, that great Ferris Bueller tune plays, and they start walking out of the office. But as soon as everyone starts walking, then they've got like walking with bravado, like in time with the music, looks cool. Everyone that sees them throws away their, like, you know, their whatever they're working on, like literally chucks it on the floor and gets behind them and starts walking. And they all are basically walking to McDonald's until there's one person that's left in the office, and she's like, where the fuck is everyone? And that's that. Now that, it's just a fucking simple script. It could be awful. If I brought that, even as a creative, if I was like, right, it's lunchtime, two girls look at each other, everyone walks out, one person feels left out, I'd be like, go again, Gareth. It's not a very good script, is it?
Well, no, and that's one of the reasons why it's kind of proved controversial, because it doesn't show any food or a McDonald's restaurant or anything like that. So it's funny, because you're right, because the idea itself, you wouldn't think much of it. That's why it leans so heavily on, I guess, his directorial chops in order to make it work. And again, it makes me wonder, though, because I watched the new Martin Madonna film recently, The Banshees.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it, yeah.
But I really enjoyed it, but I wonder if I partly really enjoyed it because I already went into it knowing him and knowing that I'm a fan of his. And I wonder if this is slightly benefiting from that as well, because where they've got the name acclaimed director and people think, oh, I love his films, therefore I should love this. I feel like they've probably slightly benefited from that. My main question with it is, well, I'll ask you, does it make you want a Big Mac?
Well, okay, that's what I was going to sort of like come onto next, because what they have done, you're right, there's no product on it, and this is the sort of key thing, and I guess if there's any strategist that's worked on it, I believe the strategy would have been, the moment you decide on having a McDonald's is the most exciting moment.
Yeah.
Now, as a dad, yeah, I can tell you, for a kid, yeah, the excitement of, all right, we'll go to McDonald's, is still huge. And as an adult, I can tell you the idea of going to McDonald's is way fucking better than when you have it, because it's
100%,
shit.
100%.
It's a letdown. It's rubbish.
Yeah. Which, that's one of the reasons why I do like the eyebrow-raising trope, because it works for the excitement as a kid. Like, yeah, this is exciting. But also, as an adult, it plays into the kind of slight element of guilt. Like, should we do something a little bit naughty?
Yeah.
That's, yeah. But weirdly, when I keep making that face to people at the office...
Oh, they follow you into the toilet. Yeah, anyway.
But this is the thing, because when I first watched it, I don't know if it made me fancy McDonald's, but then it made me think about McDonald's, and I guess they're so kind of culturally ubiquitous that as soon as I was then thinking about McDonald's, you know what McDonald's is like, and then it's still kind of, I don't know, how it conjures a certain image in your head. Then I thought, you know, I could go for a Big Mac, actually. So I think these bloody bastards might have just advertised to me.
Should I tell you what's ruined McDonald's, though? The automated bloody... the automated service now. So you walk up to a big iPad, a huge iPad, as it were, and you put your order in. I don't know, it's taken something...
That?
I don't know, it's just taken some of the ambience.
You've really...
The excitement of a queue, I don't know.
The excitement of a queue, you've really showed your age there, I think.
No, it's not. Like, it's taken something out of it, because there's a lot of people milling around, not knowing exactly what they're doing, that everyone's looking now to play if their numbers come up. It just feels like...
I'll give you that, actually. And now it feels more like... It probably feels like the people who are working there, there's less of a connection, and they're less accountable as well. So they can kind of just say... Like, it's a bit computer says no. Sorry, you can go up. Sorry, I've been waiting here for half an hour. The board,
So I'd actually been out with you somewhere. I think it might have been our Christmas party, and I ended up in Brixton on the way home to get a cab.
Oh,
right.
That one is a disaster.
It was a mosh pit.
Oh,
it was an absolute mosh pit. And do you know what I did? I was like, I can't be fucked for this. I'd ordered something, yeah?
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I'm bypassing this. And this is what I mean about that sort of human connection, which is what I was talking about. And I walked up to like one of the guys there that was serving. I was like, look, mate, I'm whatever number. I'm number 66. It's just a Big Mac. Can't you just pass me a Big Mac? And he looked at me and he could see it was like 1 a.m. and I needed something to keep me straight. And he's just like, yeah, sure. Pass me a Big Mac.
Wow.
And then I was like, I love this, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I've been in a similar situation in that Brixton McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I just decided the next order's mine. I'm just going to be quickest, and it's a lucky dip. And then it turned out to be three wraps, and I ate all of them. And I suppose technically that's sort of stealing. So if it is, maybe it didn't actually happen. Maybe I'm just making it up. Prove it.
So Edgar Wright's advert, saturated colours, people walk in, looks like a film director's done it. I mean, it's all right.
Yeah, you go in thumbs up.
I'm going thumbs
up.
I
question, because I feel like the gold mine with like an advert like this, or like a sort of big campaign, is how, I guess, publicly replicable it is. Like the should have gone to Specsavers. Like, do you think that people would repeat that, like, they'd like this advert, and like the raise of the eyebrows twice to someone in the room would imply let's go get a McDonald's? Because I don't think so, personally. Is this just a fun, cool film, basically, for them?
I think it's just that.
Yeah.
Just a fun, cool film.
Why I don't love it, but I don't think it deserves the kind of... It seems to have been very divisive between people who think it's fucking incredible and people who think it's either crap or that Edgar Wright has in some way cheapened himself by doing an advert, which is bollocks. Like, Scorsese's done adverts. Like, David Lynch did a fucking shampoo commercial. Like, that's complete bollocks. But I don't know. I'm pretty... Like every McDonald's meal, I'm going to say it's like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
Leaves you wanting a bit more. But I like it overall.
Okay, so Matt Bennett, the CCO of SAC.
I know him. I know Matt.
Have you heard of him?
I know Matt. Good guy.
Well, he's come on the podcast a couple of times. If you can't remember him, just cycle back a couple of episodes and you get a reminder.
Yeah, I believe you refer to him as the weirdo with the beardo.
Matt, that's a lie. So you know that's a lie, all right? You do know that. But he brought a story, I don't know what, a few weeks ago, about an AI text generator. It's called...
ChatGPT.
That's it, yep. ChatGPT. And I think Matt was talking about it because... Just highlighting where we're going with some of this stuff. But interestingly, what ChatGPT can do is it can write essays. So one of the sort of like fear factors, I guess... for institutions were that, you know, uni students could use it to type an essay and it's sort of like undetectable by the tutor or whoever's reading it, that it's actually been generated by AI.
Yeah, that was one of the shocking things about it. If you're a human reading it, you wouldn't be able to tell. And I've seen this story before, so I feel like I've set you up for the little twist in the tale.
Well, right, students... I mean, there you are, partying till 3 a.m, having to, like, you know, cram in your essays.
Three amateurs.
You are onto a good thing, yeah? Until one of the Weasley little ones has decided he's going to create a counterpiece of software that has been built in so that it can spot when something is AI generated as an essay.
Quite funny.
It is quite funny.
What a dickhead. That's the kind of the classic, like, miss, are you not going to collect the homework? Like, little fucking grass dickhead in the corner. But I'm not in school and I'm not at university and I don't need to write any essays. So I find it quite amusing. And also, I feel like it's another way to look at it is that it's, I guess, maintaining the integrity of the human written word.
Okay, so a couple of points on that. Nick Cave this week has been chatting about ChatGPT because someone put into it, like, try to generate what were Nick Cave lyrics, and Nick Cave has said it absolutely sucks. He would do, wouldn't he, though?
Yeah, I was thinking he would do. He's not going to say, wow, that's better than I could do.
Yeah, I know, but you feel that he is a man of integrity, and he does, talk truths.
Yeah, for sure, he's a weirdo.
But he says there's nothing more beautiful than things written by humans. He thinks that it's way off that you'll ever be able to write something as beautiful as a human being can. Was his take on it, right? Back to what we're talking about, though. I do think we do need pieces of software to spot fake writing, because I think we are on the cusp. I don't think it's right now, but I think, you know, looking 10 years down the line, we are going to need something to verify whether what we are reading is actually truth or not. Now, obviously, in the past decade, we've been through the whole fake news shenanigans, right? Wouldn't that be a good thing that, you know, like, that we'd be able to spot things in the future that haven't been generated by humans? Now, some stuff, it doesn't need to be generated by humans. If it's like, I don't know, a safety manual to, I don't know, how how to exit a building. That's fine. I don't mind if that's been written by AI. I might even prefer it.
But hang on. But now I'm thinking, are we just sort of anti-progress? If AI can do it better and it is undetectable, is this just our new reality? Because think about it, like,
it's verification, isn't it? So like, that's fine. Yeah, I'm all for how technology is developing, and I do think we need to lean into it and understand what the benefits are of it. But we also just have to be mindful of, there are moments where it could cause nefarious organisations or beings or human beings to, I don't know, what other beings I was talking about, the raccoons. That it could cause, you know, people to create harm with it, unless there was some sort of verification.
Well, how would they create harm?
Well, a hacker could, like, hack into the system and he could ask AI generate a disaster and it's coming from a government website. Do you know what I mean?
But he could just write that himself anyway. That doesn't really make a difference. You can already hack people.
But if there's an AI piece of software that is attached to a government website, yeah, it's all being generated now by AI, sort of like a ChatGPT thing, then that thing should be hackable, and therefore you can feed it with misinformation, is what I'm trying
like
to
you
say.
Could, I feel like you could already do that. You could skip out the middleman. It would just require a bit more manpower,
hours. I don't know. I do think that these things need checks and balances, and it feels like this dweeby little student is one of the checks.
He's actually a hero.
Yeah,
he doesn't know it. He thinks he's just a cretinous little wanker, but he's actually a hero.
What's your next story?
It's kind of in line with what we were just talking about. So you know how we went on a lot about Dali last year?
Yep.
So I feel like...
And we did talk a lot about Dali, but since there has been about 7 different programs that have cropped up and have sort of, you know, taken the limelight as well.
Yeah, what's the other one called? The free Midjourney is the fucking great one now.
Yeah.
But I thought it's probably time for a fresh start for something new. So we've got Vali, which is, I assume, a cousin of Dali. And this is similar to something we looked at last year as well. Do you remember we looked at James Earl Jones had, like, signed off the rights to his voice, and whoever it is, Disney, were going to use AI to recreate his voice for Darth Vader for the upcoming
stuff? In the latest Obi-Wan series.
That's what I'm saying. So we spoke about that. And so this is kind of a development of that technology. Microsoft have just released new technology that can mimic pretty much anyone's voice based on a 3-second sample. So it's kind of similar. You know how we said with Dali, how quickly it progressed within like 6 months? It was kind of unrecognizably complex. This is similar, except it's almost become unrecognizably simple in a way. So the one they needed for James Earl Jones was like Disney level budgets, and they needed quite a lot of kind of inputs of his voice in order to generate a very specific known voice, whereas this is almost, I guess, democratizing it, because now it can be done for sort of anyone, which when you combine that with, I guess, how sophisticated deep fakes are now, you could in theory create you or I or Jaron over there in the corner on the internet and not be able to tell the difference between either their face, their voice, or the content of what they're saying.
So I know I talked about nefarious and scary before. Surely this leads us to some more scary and nefarious places, or some really good ones. Yeah, you know, technology is generally there to help us out. Now, did you say, or did I read in the article, that it takes a 3-second clip of your voice and then can mimic your voice?
Yeah, 3 seconds.
Bullshit, how can it do that? Like, if there's... I can't give you my range in 3 seconds. I've got a lot of range, guys.
For you, it'll just turn the volume right up and just leave it at that. I don't know. I don't know how the sausage is made. I'll leave that to the eggheads.
So this has been developed by who? Do you know?
Microsoft.
But it's Microsoft,
so this isn't
right?
Like some kind of crazy back alley nefarious company. It's a crazy front door nefarious company.
What means do we think this will be used for? Have they talked about it? Have they given an example of where they see the future going with this sort of stuff?
Well, this is what I was wondering, because I was looking at the article and it doesn't really talk about the utility of it, I guess. So that's still left a little bit to our imagination. Like, it feels like there's a few things here. Like, you know, I said about it tying it in with deepfakes, and also that idea that you could live on in the metaverse. Like, there was an AI that could, like, download your writing and stuff, and it could it could seem to think how you think. So now it could kind of think how you think, look how you do, and sound how you do as well.
So it's another
piece of the weird puzzle of recreating a sort of sophisticated digital avatar of your average Joe on the street.
So I guess I'm trying to think where it can be, and I'm jumping way into the future here, but isn't it cool on historical figures, you know, because there's a certain amount of historical figures that you know about, and they were so far gone, there's not a lot of them left, so like there's not a lot of proof of their existence. Or
I think you meant there's not a lot of historical figures left.
No, there's plenty of those. But when they've written something down, it's amazing. Like, it kind of spins my head when I'm reading something. I'm like, well, fucking hell, the actual person wrote this.
And it gives you
a real, like, window into, like, what that person must have been like by just reading the words, the actual words that they're written. Now, before you die, if you're a person of note, you leave your voice, yeah? And then in, you know, 2,000 years' time, so I'm going to take the example of Julius Caesar, we would be able to actually hear what Julius Caesar sounds like reading his own words. That's freaky, creepy, and very interesting, right?
So basically, that's what this does. It could do... Hitler could voice his own audio book for Mein Kampf.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, actually, and also where the kind of the mimicry of thought, because someone that's written that much stuff down, you could potentially even ask Julius Caesar questions about what it was like being Julius Caesar.
Sure, exactly. I can see how that can work in the future, but I'm not quite clear what Microsoft are doing this now, except I just scared we're going to get phone scammed or something like
phone
that.
Phone scam? What are you talking about?
I just know when someone calls you up saying that they're someone when they're not actually someone.
Yeah, okay. Phone scammed. Yeah, you can't say that as if that's like a recognisable phrase. You just mean scammed
someone
on the phone.
Someone scams your mum's voice. They record it for 3 minutes, yeah? And then they send you like something going like, hello, darling, I'm out at the moment. For some reason my card's not working. Could you drop 100 quid into this account? Shit like that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do that anyway. So it's not really an issue. But I do take your point, actually. That is, yeah, like you could get an emergency call saying, help, I'm at blah, blah, blah. And you turn up and it's an ambush by the phone hackers.
Exactly. So if you're listening, teams at Microsoft and Bill, if you're listening, I mean, you're always listening, aren't you, Bill? Haven't you got listening software?
He's always listening, yeah. Exactly. But if you've been vaccinated, he's always listening, yeah.
You know, he knows every move, every bowel movement. Yeah, we'd like to know more. We'd like to see more, and we'd like to understand more.
Yeah, oi, Bill, I've got some questions.
Yeah, we've all got questions about you, Bill. All right, final story is from me, and I just thought this kind of just stuck out to me. So Rick Rubin, arguably, you know, one of the mega producers of our era. So he started off producing hip-hop, people like LL Cool J in the 80s.
Do you know what the LL actually stands for?
Something love.
Yeah, ladies love Cool J.
Yeah.
When I found that out, I thought, man, that is the worst name ever.
I mean, and, you know, the list is endless of who he's worked with, you know. So he's got his credentials, obviously, in hip-hop with, you know, like, working on The Blueprint with Jay-Z. But then, you know, he's worked with Adele. He's worked with, a slew of artists.
Well, he was Sorry, go on. I was going to say, my favorite, because he was kind of the one who was responsible of creating all those great Johnny Cash tracks.
That's what I was going to talk about.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, right at the end of his life. And he hooks him up with Joe Strummer as well, and they did a great cover of, what's it called, Bob Marley's Redemption song.
Well, do you know, like, we haven't even got to what I'm talking about yet, but Rick Rubin, essentially, he's been doing loads of podcasts recently. Yeah. Maybe he's just like, I've done really well in my life. I want people to know about me. Perhaps, I don't know. But with Johnny Cash, I think we can all agree that Hurt is probably one of the best songs of all time, right?
Yeah.
Originally written by Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. So he had to work really hard for Johnny to even listen to that. So he'd send, CDs at the time with, you know, songs that they were discussing, because they're all covers on that album, songs that he should be singing. And he said, did you listen to the Nine Inch Nails one? And Johnny was like, yeah, no. And then nothing was said about it. But then like 2 weeks later, he's like, oh, did you listen to that? Johnny Cash was like, actually, I gave it another listen, so shall we do that? Because it's just an amazing example, I think, of how a different application of the same thing means so much more.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Because I like the Trent Reznor version, the Nine Inch Nails version as well, but that's kind of like a young man wailing at the moon, why isn't life fair? Whereas the Johnny Cash one's kind of
dripping with regret.
But it's also it's a regret, but a kind of resignation to his faith, I guess, which was nice.
Anyways,
and until I found out that he didn't write that song, you absolutely wouldn't know it. Like, you can feel the pain in every single word.
Yeah, exactly. So and I guess, as you know, bringing it back to what we do, like, there are some great platforms out there or great ideas, but sometimes the execution lets you down, doesn't it? Like, and you could have executed.
You said doesn't it, as if I'd done something wrong there.
And you nodded, yeah. Like you agreed.
Yes, I'm sure. I don't know what I've done wrong, but I'm sure I fucked something up.
It was along the lines of creativity that I found this 60 Minutes interview with Rick Rubin interesting, because in it he says, and it's taken up a few headlines this week, I have no technical ability and I know nothing about music. So the guy, I forget what his name is, but the American person that was interviewing him was like, yeah, no, but aren't you behind the soundboard? He's like, yeah, but I don't really understand. I'm not that technical. I'll get someone else to do it. And he was like, all right, okay, so don't you do this because you know what audiences want? And he's like, I'm not doing this for audiences. I'm doing it because this is what I like, yeah? And basically just goes on to say that he doesn't give a shit what the audience wants. He's not an expert. It's just his own personal opinion. So in a way, he's just creatively directing what happens. And he says he's more about reductionism. An artist comes in and says, these are the things I want to do. This is the song. And all he does is he just listens to it and gives it an opinion. Now, I thought that was an interesting thing as creatives, because we always have to prove our mythologies, and clients need to be made happy that we understand their goals in terms of their commercial aspirations and all of that. But at the end of the day, a lot of it is just good creatives just know.
Well, it's an eye and an ear, yeah, exactly.
Exactly,
I was gonna
say,
that's your style of creative direction, isn't it? Give me a bit more pizzazz, pow, 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 pow.
I'm like an old school 60s photographer.
Yeah, exactly. I want a bit more whammy.
I just thought that he can say that because he's got stratospheric success.
Yeah, is he just saying it?
Well, I don't know, but I do think that, like, a lot of people just do that, but it's not something that you kind of say that you do, because
yeah,
you want to feel that you have some process to what you're doing, right?
I feel like, I don't know, the cynic in me thinks that he's trying to make himself sound more like a kind of innate genius, visionary, like, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing, man, I just feel the music. Like, if I didn't, he's a bit weird with Ruben, and he's, I was going to say pretentious, but he's kind of earned the right to be a little bit pretentious in a way. So if I wasn't aware of him, I'd think this guy just sounds like a bit of a cock. But it is interesting, because again, relating back to what we do, like, oftentimes I know you get kind of trained editors and stuff, but you don't get like kind of classically trained creatives, and often they'll come from all sorts of different areas rather than, like, you don't study creatives act being a creative at university, well, for example.
No, exactly. But listen, like, the work that we do, we might be throwing like a culturally underground party one week, and then we'll be making a film on something else. And I think to be a really well-rounded creative, you have to be able to do a lot, but you have to admit that you're not expert in everything. But you know what? Yeah, I can do that. I understand when I look at something how it's done, I guess, and I don't need to have been through all the process steps. I need to know the right people that can get me there when you go to that execution. But more or less, when I'm looking at it, I kind of understand where all the hidden bits of magic are that sort of sew that together. And I guess that's what he's kind of saying.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're exactly like Rick Rubin.
Thank you very much. That's what I thought. All right, James. Interesting discussions there.
Yeah. It was a different one from usual. Normally this would...
As I said, no shouting.
I know, yeah. There was a bit of shouting, but normally I would have kind of tallied them in my mind.
All right, well, just to round up there, we talked firstly about...
Mackie's
McDonald's,
Edgar Wright.
Yeah, and Edgar Wright. Then we talked about ChatGPT and the piece of software someone's...
Yeah, I do like that, actually.
That's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and also it's just such shithousery. Like, I find that quite funny. Like, it's the most complicated, impressive way to be a bit of a knob.
Then what was the story that you brought?
The recreating everyone's voices from the 3-second clip.
I'm a bit worried. I do think that that's got some huge use and that it will be used.
But it's going to be used.
Microsoft are behind it, so they know something.
Exactly. And you said, what exactly do Microsoft want it for? They probably just think, if someone's going to have it, we may as well have it. It'll be useful for something at some point. They probably just want to own the patent.
Yeah, and then weirdy beardy Rick Rubin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
I'm a fan of that one, weren't you?
I like that one. I enjoyed talking about it. I just don't know. I don't know if I want Cool Shit headline. Rick Rubin reckons he's sick.
It is more of a discussion.
But I'm glad you brought it to the table. Anyway.
All right, okay. If people want to go and read the Cool Shit newsletter, where do they go, James?
ZachAgency.com/cool-sht/. We still need to change that.
All right. Well, we'll be back with another a more shouty episode next week. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Gareth. Goodbye.